to where Death Holler brought us. Season 3, Slash or Pass. It became the classic horror film podcast of its time. And now Death Holler brings us the most shocking season ever.
Daniel Pops.
Season 4, Dead or Dead.
Yeah, they're dead. They're all messed up.
Imagine, if you will, that one of the hosts is absolutely terrified of zombies.
So, what's the plan? Bash him in the head. That seems to work out.
No, except the fact there is no escaping this horror. Death Holler brings back the dead. Remember, when you're in Death Holler, listener discretion is advised. With hospitality like this, you'll never want to leave. We hope you stay alive.
When there's no more room in hell, the dead will walk the earth.
Welcome back to Death Holler. I am your host, Reverend Dr. Death. Joining me as always is my co-host, La Urena. Whoa, space slugs. You hate them, right? I hate them myself. They're a pretty bad little bitch to have to deal with. So picture this. Sicily. No, we're not going the route of Estelle from the Golden Girls. Lookout Point during a nice quaint night in 1950s America. Got your best gal by your side, and you're just staring up at star-filled sky, not a care in the world, until a fucking space probe filled with experimental mind-controlling slugs crash lands and causes all hell to break loose. That's right, everyone. The space slug zombie might not be the most prevalent version of the undead, slow-walking menace that we've come to know and love, but thanks to the likes of Fred Decker and James Gunn, it's not the most unheard of zombie subgenre. You might even throw in Cronenberg's first film as an offbeat example of the genre, albeit more terrestrial in origin. And I did watch that today, and it actually fits quite a bit with these other ones, and you can see where they got their inspiration. So grab your flamethrowers, put on that old vinyl of Every Woman in the World, and get ready to be thrilled as we cover Night of the Creeps and Slither. But first, if you're enjoying the podcast, we would appreciate it if you would take the time to like, comment, subscribe on whatever podcast platform you prefer. It helps us get more visibility on podcast listings and helps us grow. Also, consider following us on social media. You can find us on TikTok and Twitter under Death Holler Pod, and we can be found on Instagram and Facebook under Death Holler Podcast. We appreciate everyone who listens and hope you enjoy the show. First up, Night of the Creeps from 1986. Tagline: the good news is your dates are here. The bad news is they're dead.
Okay, that one's good. I'll let them have that one. I mean, I know it's a line in the movie, too. It's one of the quotes, but, like, that was fucking funny.
It's a good line. It's and well, it works pretty well.
What's the bad news?
So what's the bad news? They're dead.
Ladies, let's be honest. Guys at that age, it's like they're dead anyways. No fucking communication skills. And all of a sudden when they get older, all of a sudden they want to communicate. They want someone who's a good communicator. But they spent all them years ignoring us.
Yeah, we just walk around with a slack-jawed expression on our face, expecting sex and food. And,
Pretty much.
And that's about it, so... directed by Fred Decker, written by Fred Decker, music by Barry DeVorzin, made for a budget of $5 million US dollars. It only made $591,000.
That's unfortunate.
Womp womp. That is terrible. But it has found its home on, you know, physical media and in the hearts of cult, you know, movie fans everywhere. So it finally found its place. Principal players, we have Jason Lively playing Chris Romero, one of the few ginger protagonists that I think I've ever seen in a movie, period.
Is he ginger?
Yeah, he's a redhead, like legit.
I don't know why I didn't catch that, but I'm Googling it, but continue.
I'm glad you're blind to ginger, you know, like differences. That's very big of you. He was in National Lampoon's European Vacation. He played Rusty in that version, since there's been like three or four already, if I remember right. Might be even more than that now. He was in the movie The Possessed from 2017, and also in Rock and Roll High School Forever, which I think was a sequel to maybe a Corey Feldman movie, but he could have been in the sequel instead. I don't know.
Okay, hold on. I'm interrupting. Jason Lively is like ginger-ish.
He's
a hint of ginger.
Look up pictures from the movie, though. He's pretty red.
I guess there's scenes where he is, but there's also scenes where he doesn't look as gingery. And he doesn't have freckles, so bonus points for that.
Not all of us have freckles on our face, okay?
I don't believe you.
Well, I mean, you're looking at one right now that doesn't have freckles on their face, so I don't know what to tell you.
Oh, my goodness.
Jill Whitlow plays Cynthia Cronenberg. You're getting a hint with these names. We got Chris Romero. We got Cynthia Cronenberg.
I was like, I wonder if Reverend is catching this. There's no way he's not, because as soon as I heard Cronenberg, I was like, well, bingo, there's one. Yes, but then I heard Romero, and then there's another one, and maybe I think there's one, but I guess we'll
catch all of the majors. We'll get to them. Okay. Just tell me what director they're referencing as we go along.
Okay.
So obviously, Cynthia Cronenberg, we've already covered Cronenberg, so it's obvious where that connection's at. And Romero, I mean, it's a zombie movie with like, yeah, weird space slugs that mutate you. I get the connection between both of them. She's the dream girl turned heroine at the end of the movie. Somebody pointed this out, and I didn't think about this until I read it on the internet. She's like one of the first few like female like action like kind of star. I mean, heroes in like a movie like period, because like you think about it, we didn't start really getting female protagonists like lead movies and action style movies till like the late 90s or maybe mid 90s, but 80s was not a time when that was a thing. So I mean, outside of Linda Hamilton and Terminator, Jill is one, I mean, or Cynthia is one of the first.
Well,
that's kind of cool.
Cynthia also has a male sidekick. She is the sidekick to the male. She's literally just the backup singer. She's not.
And there's people out there that are screaming at me that Ripley been in the 70s, and I understand that. I'm just throwing out there. There's not been a lot.
Yeah.
So anyways.
She is a kind of an action star, but she's more or less like she's just kind of being told what to do. She's not taking action herself.
Yeah, she's kind of but she does, in the one scene, she saves Chris.
Yeah.
In the tool / garden shed, whatever
the hell that thing was, yeah.
She was in Porky's. She was in a movie called Victim No More, where it's a newer type movie that's a short, where she plays Cynthia Romero.
Interesting.
Which is funny, because does that mean she plays like the married version of her character from this movie?
Okay, I caught that and I was like, oh, I wonder.
And Victim No More is a Friday the 13th fan film. Okay. So it's like she's playing Cynthia Romero in that situation.
Okay.
And then she played in a movie called Naked Cannibal Campers.
Okay. No, thank you.
By the way, this is in the trivia. This is her first film that she did nudity in. And then maybe did it a few more times afterwards.
Oh, yeah, because she turns around. I didn't think she was going to, but then she turns around and I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, they actually said that in the behind the scenes. Fred Decker wanted it to be a situation where you thought you was going to get blue balls from that scene, and then they give you the goods right before they cover her up. So
thrill me.
Tom Atkins, speaking of thrill me, plays Ray Cameron. What you recognize that last name?
Cameron. I'm not understanding. I can't remember. James Cameron.
Okay. I was getting ready to start quoting some stuff from Titanic to see if you finally got it.
I wouldn't have connected the two. I know that sounds so dumb of me, but we're talking about me, so I can admit my faults.
Thrill me. I mean, that's what you should just summarize his character as in this movie,
since he says
it all the time. But he is the suicidal detective. Now, did you catch the suicide attempt that he made in this movie?
No.
So when Chris comes to tell him that Alfalfa has died, I believe that's the scene that it's at. In the scene, when he hears the knock at the door, he goes and very strangely, he rips away duct tape away from all the facings of the door. Oh. And you think for a second that he's trying to keep the slugs out. But later, and they make a big point of this, it shows an open gas oven.
Yes, I did see it. And it's funny because I still connected that to the slugs. I'm like, oh, he's going to blow these motherfuckers up.
Well, and he does in a different way later on.
No, okay. No, I did. I saw it, but I didn't catch that he was trying to kill himself.
Yeah, he'd had enough. After he killed the zombie of the psycho that took out his girlfriend, he was ready to just call it quits. He's obviously the main star in Halloween 3 Season of the Witch, which we will cover at some point because we both love that movie. We've already covered The Fog with him and My Bloody Valentine 3D that had him in it. And he got a pickaxe right to the face in that movie.
Yes,
so.
I remember that scene. That was one of the better ones.
Yeah, one of the better 3D scenes in the movie. Mm-hmm. We have Steve Marshall playing James Carpenter.
Oh, Lord.
J.C. Hooper. You get the names in that one.
No,
obviously.
Never heard of any one of those.
Who is the best wingman in the history of wingmen ever? So, I mean, you couldn't ask for a better friend than this guy.
Yeah, I mean, literally giving him the deets on what to do and how it works. Fuck yeah.
And, well, even going and getting the girl to acknowledge that he exists. Like, he's risking getting his ass beat in the process.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, he went for it. I mean, that for, like, me, that would be, like, a total turnoff. I'd be like, you're a little bitch if you can't come talk to me, you know? Then I'd go date the guy that has the fucking arm crutches.
Yeah, I mean, I could have seen it going a different route based upon the fact that he had the confidence to come up to her. But, and also, we'll get to it, but Steve has probably the best audio recording of any person I think that I've ever heard ever in one of these horror movies.
In the 80s, period.
Yeah. Wally Taylor plays Detective Landis. Do you get that name?
No, Landis is going over my head.
John Landis made American Werewolf in London.
Okay. And I did, okay, on God, I did think John Landis, but why am I thinking John Landis is an actor?
I don't know. His son is, I think, but he's not, okay. Or he wasn't.
That's where I was going with it, so, okay. Maybe I just need to say what I'm feeling.
Bruce Solomon plays Sergeant Raimi.
Oh, God, yes, Raimi, I got that one.
And then the rest of these are just people, but I threw them in here because of the reasons. Alan Kazer plays Brad, who is the most stereotypical 80s bad guy ever. He was really given, what's the guy's name from Cobra Kai, Johnny, you know, the blonde-haired guy? Like, all 80s guys looked like Johnny or this guy. Like, the blonde guy, the stereotypical frat boy jock.
Yeah. His name, I'm sorry, what was his name again? It was
Brad.
Brad, yeah, he was a total, like, Cody or Chad, you know.
Because his car even had the Bradster on the back of it.
Yes, oh my God, dude. It was, it was a thing.
We have Suzanne Snyder playing Lisa, the blonde sorority sister that announces that Brad is there for Cynthia, and it turns out it's the dead Brad. Did you recognize Suzanne Snyder in this role? We just covered a movie with her in it.
I'm reading it, so Return of the Living Dead 2. I don't recognize her.
She was the redheaded chick that was let Tom Matthews eat her brains in that movie or whatever.
No, I did not recognize her.
Yeah, and also the heroine from Attack of the Killer Clowns from Outer Space. Or the, well, she doesn't really save herself. She's more of a damsel in that movie, but still. It was surprising because I saw her when she turned around. She's like, Cynthia, Brad's here. And they focused in on her face, and I'm like, I know her. Like, and then I looked it up, and I was like, okay, that makes sense.
I know that bitch.
And then David Paymer, who plays the young scientist whose forgetfulness was his undoing. This is the guy, whenever you mentioned in your review of Repo the Genetic Opera about Sorvino, or whatever his name is, that is the actor that's like, I know that guy, but you don't know his name. David Paymer is like always a scientist or some kind of nerdy guy in almost every 80s or early 90s movie you've ever seen in your life. In particular, City Slickers 2, Legend of Curly's Gold, he plays like either a doctor or a psychiatrist in that movie. So, I mean, he's been in a ton of shit. When I saw his face, I'm like, oh, yeah, it's that guy, you know?
Yeah, he looked recognizable, but I don't.
He blends in. Okay. He's just that. If you look at his IMDb, he's got like a million bit parts. Like, he just plays in the background. That's what he does. Synopsis. In 1959, a rogue alien sends out a pod of experimental brain-destroying slugs, which ends up crash-landing near Lookout Point in Anytown, USA. A young teenage couple leaves to investigate, resulting in the deaths of both, one by a psychopath with an axe, and the other with said space slugs laying eggs in his brain. Skip ahead to 1986, and our ginger protagonist, Chris, is out with the best wingman in history trying to score a date with a cute sorority girl, Cynthia. And he tries to join a fraternity and impress her, and his task with finding a corpse is a hazing prank. Unfortunately for everyone, Chris and JC unleash Johnny the Space Slug Zombie and set forth a string of deaths and mayhem. Detective Cameron is looking for thrills. JC's voice recording brings chills. And Cynthia looks good working a flamethrower. If you scream, you're dead.
Yeah, you do want to be quiet. I just thought of something kind of depressing. Not really depressing for me. I'm married, so I'm fine. But, like, wow. I just realized, no, you're going to, this is funny. My husband's just joining right now. I feel like I'm the JC of my friends group because I feel like I'm the, like, I don't give a fuck about this. Like, this does not bother me at all. I feel like I'm the least prettiest of my friends. Like, if we go out. So I'm always, like, the wingman, like, trying to, like, you know, help my friends. Figure some shit out.
As the kids would say, rizz them up. Yes. Is that what you're trying to say? Yeah.
Yep, they're all single.
But the problem is, I'm the one with the personality because I don't have the looks that they have, but they don't got no fucking personality, so they can't fucking land anything.
You're also the one that's in a stable relationship.
I know that.
I know. So what does pretty got to do if you're fucking miserable and you want to kill yourself?
Did you just call me ugly?
What the fuck are you talking? You know what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
You make that comment, but at the same time, these are the women that can't get a hold of a guy for more than 2 to 3 months at a time.
I'm aware of that, unless they get pregnant.
Yeah, and then they're just in a really toxic situationship.
So, like, then it's like, sometimes, not always, it's like, well, what's going on with you? And then I got to flash the ring, like, well, I'm married, but she's single, you know? Like,
well, but that's the thing, in the movie, Chris actually has a personality, so yeah. It works out.
He's not uglier. He's just got the crutches. That's really the only thing that would bother probably girls back then.
Yeah. Other taglines from this movie is thrill me.
Fuck no. I never want to hear that ever again.
So I told you you'd be so sick of hearing that. And then it'll be the night of your life. Death. I don't know where that even comes from. Where it doesn't even work. They don't bother to knock. I mean, okay.
No, that's not true, because they do knock. Like, one even threw a fucking rock, a pebble, at the girl's window.
Did the zombie do that?
Yes. Or was that he did, before he climbed the fire escape. And then
he did in the past.
Yes.
Like, okay.
And
yes,
his head exploded,
okay.
And fucking penis worms came out of it.
Well, that one zombie that the dog fucking got infected, the dude, he knocked on the door. And then he stood at the door waiting for the girl to come out.
That's true.
Oh, yeah,
he waited for his
aid.
Yes.
Brad.
The Bradster.
Yeah, he was standing there.
So that is false, and that will not work. We don't like any of those taglines.
The other one about your dates are dead, that's way better anyway.
Oh, yeah, that's way better. And if you think about it, have you seen the poster for this movie?
Oh, yeah, the dead face standing at the door or whatever with the prom suit on. Yeah.
Yes. So, I first of all, that looks amazing. Second, it was awesome to physically see that in the movie. So, really, in terms of your dates are dead, yeah, that's... I like that way better.
Yeah, it's a lot better. Quotes, and we're not going to thrill me again because it's been used so many times. Detective Cameron does have all the quotes in the movie, though. Zombies, exploding heads, creepy crawlies, and a date for the formal. This is classic Spanky. also, Detective Cameron, what is this, a homicide or a bad B movie?
That one was funny.
I like that one.
Who was the cop? I always forget that dude's name.
Tom Atkins.
Yeah, he sold the movie, hands down.
Yeah. Yeah, there's one scene in particular when we talk about like the acting that I put him way over the top for that. But Brad, okay, so we put you up to it, but we said the Phi Omega Gamma House, not the Kappa Delta sorority. Do you know the difference? And Chris shrugs and says it's all Greek to me.
Yeah, that was funny.
And then finally, Sergeant Raimi, Detective Cameron, and then Cameron, no, Bozo the Clown, which he also says Bullwinkle and the Moose at 1.2. Mm-hmm. So. So visually, how did you feel about the zombies in this movie? Well, actually, there's zombies, there's aliens, there's undead animals. I'm trying to think, there's the cryogenic tube. I mean, there's a lot of different little sci-fi elements in this movie, and the spaceship. Can't forget the spaceship.
The aliens at the beginning of the movie threw me off. First thing I said was, I fucking hate this. And Noah's like, just stick with it. Just stay with
it. I knew the aliens were going to get you because I was looking at them. I'm like, man, there's some janky-ass aliens.
Did you see their butts, though? They had butt cracks. I mean, yeah. They were definitely double-cheeked up. Like, those aliens were packing some cheeks. So. Well,
they were going to get, like, puppets to do it. And then he wanted it to look even jankier, so he got little people to put on suits and run around in that.
It was god-awful. So fuck those aliens. That was... I hated it. I was waiting for like it to be a horror movie that they were watching, like a really bad horror film, and that's not what we got. So there was that. The aliens, specifically like the prom, you know, guy aliens and everything, and the other people that were turned into aliens, zombies. I'm gonna go with aliens. I don't agree that this is a full on zombie movie, but they actually looked really good. I did like the dog. I thought that was pretty cool.
My favorite zombie in the movie, and there's two different variants of it, is the psycho with the axe, because he is very dead, you know?
Oh, yeah, and yeah, yeah. With his fucking skeleton.
There's one
face.
Version of him that's in Cameron's dream, and then there's another version that's the actual one walking around,
yeah.
You know?
No, so. He looked really good, too. So, especially for an 80s movie, like, that's it. I will definitely give it that.
Here's something to throw out there. I was looking up to see what year it came out, and it was actually the same exact year, so one couldn't claim that the other inspired it unless two directors talked to each other or writers. Critters has almost the same starting scenario as this movie, if you think about it, because the Kreitz are on the ship, they get out of it, and they land on Earth, and then causes all the shit to happen.
Well, fortunately for me, I don't remember Critters. I remember liking it. Well, calm down. I just don't remember a lot of details from it. So
the aliens don't look like the little guys in this at all, though. They're a different type of alien.
I don't know. When we get to that, Critters is going to be alien season.
Yeah, sci-fi aliens, whatever you want to call it.
So, all you got to know about Critters is the cop's a pussy in the first one, and the cop's the fucking man in the second one.
When they change cops too, or I think they are the actors for the cop at least, but yeah. But I like the psycho zombie in this. I thought the cryogenic tube in the science lab was kind of cool.
Yeah.
Because you got to remember what they're trying. He's trying to mimic like throw in all the cliches from the B movies. And he even says it's an inspiration because it's at Corman University, and Roger Corman just made like schlocky B movie after B movie back in the 50s. It was like space aliens, zombies from space. They even go back, they play it in this movie. Plan 9 from Outer Space from Ed Wood is playing in this movie. So that's the inspiration for this.
Oh, fuck.
You know, like just throw a bunch of shit together and, you know, say, here you go, guys, deal with it.
Yeah.
So, what about the slugs themselves? Because we didn't mention that. Because we kind of need to compare them with Slither a little bit when we get to that movie. So how do you feel about like the slugs in this one?
We can compare them. I'm not going to particularly right now. I'm going to say for 1986, they looked pretty fucking good. And they did a good job of making them move around and everything, you know?
I kind of like them better than Slither, but we'll get to that when we get to that movie. I mean, they're fine, but, you know,
yeah.
I feel like they have presence in this movie because they're actual real things that they were moving around.
Oh, that's, yeah. I mean, I kind of figured, like, when you saw them skidding, you know, skedaddling, if you will, across the fucking lawn, that maybe it was like they were on a fish line and just being kind of dragged and jiggled.
There's at least one scene in this movie. It's Brad's scene with the dog whenever he sends the thing into his mouth. You can tell it's one of those reverse shots where the slug started Brad's mouth and they just reversed the, you know, how it went, because the way his head moves, it's like, oh, okay, they did that whole thing. So
yeah, I didn't catch that, but that's okay. Particularly in that scene, I thought the dog looked pretty stupid, but I mean, it is what it is. You know, I wasn't like, oh, that's horrible. I could do better. I can't, you know, they did what they could. It just was pretty funny looking, and then the dog shot it in his mouth, and I was like, are you fucking kidding me? You got the dog, you fucking monster.
One visual that I don't know if you caught, because I don't know what version you watched the movie. How did the movie end for you?
Fuck, it ended with her, the girl, and what's his name, kissing.
Yep.
And I don't know if there was anything else. I can't remember. Do you remember, babe? Why are you looking at me like that?
I'm not.
Okay, I think that's what I got.
So the theatrical cut, they kiss, and then the dog runs up, the one that's, you know, since it released all of its, you know, little slugs or whatever into the bus with all the dead boyfriends. It comes back somehow miraculously, and she leans down and she's like, oh, and then she starts pet on it, and it shoots out one of its things into her mouth, and that's how the movie ends, insinuating that Cynthia at the end of it just automatically gets turned into a slug or one of the, you know, zombies. But the director's cut, which is the preferred version for me whenever I watch it, is they kiss, and then you see it cuts, and you see Detective Cameron, and he's got, it's really good makeup effects. He's burnt.
Oh,
he's smoking, literally and physically, I mean, and metaphorically.
And then the worms go to the cemetery.
Yes,
I saw that one.
They go into the cemetery.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, I did catch that. So that's the one I watched. I'm sorry.
That's the director's cut, and then the spaceship shows up over top and, you know, starts scanning the cemetery.
Flashing high beams at everything.
I prefer that ending. I think it's a lot better than the theatrical, because I think it's kind of shitty that after all they went through that Cynthia gets a slug in her mouth. It's like,
maybe she wanted a slug in her mouth.
It is a dick slug, so.
Yeah, well, not the one she was anticipating, at least.
Oh, you get what you get sometimes. Maybe she should have picked a different guy,
you
know?
Get what you get, and you don't throw a fit.
The story of this one's scattershot for it's supposed to be. We're not getting like Rabid 2019 levels of like anything. It's space aliens, you know, two kids, you know, in the 50s up on the hill, even in black and white. And it's like, gee golly, what's that in the woods? And, you know, it's like, dude, are you fucking gay? Like, she was ready to go. Like, what the fuck are you doing? You know?
I don't understand, though. I need to be explained, like I'm a fucking kindergartner. Where did was the slasher alive when he got her because he had escaped the mental institution, or was he a zombie?
He was alive.
Yes.
Okay, he was alive. Okay.
Yeah, and then he hit her with an axe.
The best line in the movie, it's part of acting and story, one of the best scenes in the movie, is that right after... actually, this might be right whenever Chris, you know, says that his friend died. Anyways, there's a scene where him and Cameron sit down and Cameron in like a some kind of place, and Cameron pours him a drink, and he has this monologue like Tom Atkins does, and he's like, and he says, "Do you know what happened?" He's like, "What happened to your girlfriend, your high school girlfriend, or did you, you know?" And he's like, "Oh, we broke up." And he's like, "You want to know what happened to mine? Well, you know." And then he relays a story. He says that she was killed with an axe. He tracked down the killer, and, you know, whenever he killed him, you know, with a shotgun.
Yeah.
And that's one of the best lines in the movie, too, because he's like, well, did you go by yourself? And he's like, no, I had my shotgun. You know, like that was it. The way he delivers, it's like, okay, he's off the deep end at this point.
Yeah.
And nothing that Chris says to him, he even registers at that point. He's just telling his story. And And he, you know, tells how he buried the guy underneath the, you know, sorority mom's house or whatever she is.
That makes sense. And then you see him come up, which why would, I don't know why he'd bury them under here, there, but whatever.
Did you not? That's like my favorite part when he sit down talking to the kid and the kid's like, holy fuck.
Oh, that is expert acting on Tom Atkins' behalf. Like, that is a very, that scene is sold because of him. Like,
yes, 100%. You know what? I didn't go alone. No, I wasn't alone at all. I took my shotgun. The kids is like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, just everything he says in that scene. You need to play it back sometime. They got it on just like you, probably YouTube. On YouTube. You just watch that one scene by itself.
Probably even on TikTok.
But that scene, and I'm going to say it, that scene where Chris comes back and he finds the recording from JC.
Oh, yeah.
That gives me chills listening to that.
That was,
It's the way he says it, because it's not the way the guy sounds in the movie, so you can tell there's something wrong with him from the get-go. His voice is lower, and if you listen in, they did a really good job with the audio cues on that. You can hear the slug squealing underneath him talking every time that he says something.
That one was like, I was like, fuck, man. I was like, well, he's done for.
Yeah, and then Chris goes downstairs to the boiler and he sees the dead slugs that have like fried right outside of JC's head.
Yeah.
It's a pretty good scene for a movie that shouldn't have a scene that good, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah.
Because all it does is joke, and that one scene just like, I mean, it's the emotional weight of this movie, if there is any at all. But other than that, like, a lot of it's just them, you know, cracking jokes and all that. I did like the scene at the end, though, where Tom Atkins tells them to get out, and then he sacrifices himself for them.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
What did you think about the story overall? I mean, you know, like, just like I said, it's one B movie thrown into another B movie. You got psycho killers, space aliens, slugs, zombies. I mean, I don't know what else they could have thrown in there, but I'm sure if they'd had like some radioactive ant or something, that would have been like the other thing they could have done.
Yeah. I mean, it was just an 80s Mod Podge, if you will, of a bunch of things going on and trying to get through one storyline, which was primarily the dick slug. So like, I get it. At least it kind of wrapped around that, you know?
They wrapped something around those slugs.
But other than that, yeah, I mean, it was just, I don't know, it came off very typical 80s to me, and it was okay. It's not meant to, like, you know, make you think, you know, critically or anything. It's just meant for you to enjoy and watch film.
It's just fun. That's all it is.
See,
that's
shit
all
blow it's ever up, like, you know, watch people fight for their lives.
Yeah, there's even a callback to one of my favorite movies ever, which is the Monster Squad in this movie, where Tom Atkins looks up at him and he says, dead guys don't just get up and walk away. And of course, we pan to the zombie, and then they say the same thing in Monster Squad, and then it pans to the, you know, mummy walking, you know, somewhere outside the museum. So
it's been so long since I've watched that.
That movie did not hold up.
I think you said that one time.
Monster Squad is, have you tried watching that now as an adult, Sean?
I love that movie, man. I don't care.
Rewatch it, dude. I loved it as a kid. I watched it as an adult, and I was like, oh, my God. That movie and Rawhead Rex are the two movies that didn't hold up.
I can't. I mean, I don't know about Rawhead Rex. I never did watch that. But
oh, you got to watch that, dude.
After you just told me that it doesn't hold up.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing, though. But there's been movies where I've been like, oh, my God, I remember liking this movie. And then I watch it. I'm like, this movie's a piece of shit, you know. So there's going to be those ones that we remember them a certain way. But then now that we're older, that's just going to happen. And I'm not going to hold that against the films, you know.
I still love the Monster Squad. I watch it as an adult. I know what I'm getting going into it, so I don't, like, you know, overestimate what I'm getting out of it. It's just a fun little kids movie, is basically. It's like whenever I watch Goonies. I mean, if you go into that expecting, you know, Indiana Jones, after you've experienced other, like, pulpy things, you're going to get disappointed in that movie, too. But
Goonies holds up, though.
I feel like Monster Squad holds up. I mean, it really does for me.
Rewatch it, man. Rewatch it.
I don't remember. I have.
That's what I'm saying. I've rewatched it like last year. I don't know how often you want me to rewatch this to get it to not hold up.
Yeah. I mean, if it holds up for you, like, that's fine. I remember liking Monster Squad. I have yet to decide if I don't in my older years like it or whatnot. I will say that I can't get into The Goonies, and everyone loves that film, and I know everyone's going to come at me for that, and that's fine, but...
What?
Yeah. I've never really thoroughly enjoyed that movie.
Fucking un-American. That's how I know you weren't born here.
Well, it's a good thing I married you, and I have a green card now.
I feel like younger kids don't connect with The Goonies either. I feel like you had to be of that generation to really...
I think our kids like it. I think... Well, if no one else... Benny does, but I don't know. Do you remember if Tiny Lucifina likes it, babe?
It's hard to tell. The kids are hit and miss.
Yeah, well, I know Benny likes it, so.
What did you think about the acting in the movie?
80s acting.
What is 80s acting? Because you realize that some of the best movies ever came out in the 80s, so that doesn't say anything.
Overacting, trying real hard for the punchline. Sometimes they hit it, sometimes they didn't, in my opinion. And that's
But you got to remember, this is a love letter to B movies. That's the hope. That's why they're overacting. That's why there's the.
How are you supposed to know that going in, though? They don't really. I mean, like, he says that in one of his lines, but that's just him saying shit, in my opinion.
Well, you just got. I mean, it helps to know that that's why. I mean, Fred Decker has said numerous times that's what this movie is. It's just. You know, he loved B movies. That's what this is supposed to be, like a love letter to. Then
it makes sense. But yeah, it's your typical 80s acting, it's your typical 80s music, typical 80s, you know, styles going on and everything. You got your valley girls, you got your nerds, you know, the jocks and everything. So, which FYI, it's so funny. The kids don't understand nowadays what a valley girl is.
No, they're so disconnected from that.
I'm trying to think of what movie you would not think, I mean, to have 80s acting in. Like, I think of Back to the Future, and I'm like, what is so, I mean, obviously the setting and the music and all that is 80s, but, like, they're just acting in scenes. Like, I don't get, like,
I feel like sometimes back then they were super over-enthusiastic about things. I don't know.
Well, look at Night at the Creeps. Look at all the bros that were getting in the bus from the frat house.
Mm-hmm.
That's a, like, total... Like 80s type bro, because the current bros aren't like that.
That is 80s type bro.
Yes.
Yeah, those are like pussy crusher. We're going to crush some pussy bro, like crush some pussy bros. Like today, they don't do it anymore.
They like, probably do. They just don't. They don't say it out loud.
Is this consensual? Because I don't want nothing to do if it isn't.
Yeah, and they'd probably, you know, there'd be a couple of them that are actually women, but with like mustaches or something.
So yeah, that's really all I have to say. It was okay. Some people were good. Some people, like, obviously, the Asian janitor. Tell me that's not your typical Asian guy that was in the movies. Like, think of, like, a Ducky.
When I think of typical Asian actor, I think of, the movie Big Trouble in Little China. Like, that movie is filled with typical, like, 80s Asian characters.
That's how you know Kurt Russell's the man.
Yeah, so
now, that movie fits what you're describing as like 80s stuff. Like even the way that he's just like, you know, Mr. Charming, like truck driver and all that. That's typically 80s.
I liked JC. I liked what's her name? Jill. Well, Cynthia, sorry.
Cynthia,
I liked her
yeah.
character. Fucking Ray got on my nerves.
I figured he'd be the one that would get on your nerves just because he's the most out there of all the characters.
Yeah. So, and then, of course, Brad did his part really well. I mean, you're not supposed to like Brad.
The funniest thing about him to me is as a zombie just stands there and he's just like, you know, and she even takes him by the arm and just like, okay.
He sits down with her and everything. Like, that was funny, you know. But, yeah, I don't know.
I'm throwing this out there. I don't know if we're going to review it because I don't know how you'd feel about this with another Cronenberg movie. Watching Shivers and what they got away with in that movie back when it came out, like, that movie's fucking wild. I'm
Shivers?
Just throwing it out there.
Well, I've never seen it. What year is that movie?
It's 70s, but I mean, that's what I'm saying. It came out, I mean, it gets by with a lot. 75.
What is that movie again? I'm trying to... remember it.
It's similar to Slither.
Shiver?
Shivers.
Shivers. It was David Cronenberg's first movie. It's set in a high-rise building in like some kind of island-type setting or whatever, like off the coast of Canada or whatever. And it's an all-inclusive like place, like when you could live and work in the same building, like the and maybe like a couple places on the island. But the whole point of the movie is that there was this one doctor who was trying to work on the synopsis of the story. He's trying to invent like a parasite that would do the work of like organs for like organ transplant purposes, because you know obviously
the cure for diabetes.
It's actually smart the way they describe it, because like, you know, somebody's kidney's failing, you can't find a kidney for them. You put this parasite in, it hooks into your circulatory system. You give it a little blood, it feeds off your blood, but it filters out, you know, the bad stuff and works as your kidney. So that's, you know, it kind of does
sign
that job.
Sign me it's up.
Not- Why haven't I heard about this movie? I got a feeling I've seen it before.
Yeah, but from what I'm reading in the synopsis, those who become hosts turn into erotically obsessed maniacs.
Erotically?
And they pass the bug through grape.
So that's the thing. The guy who was supposed to be making the organ transplant parasites goes another route with them, and because he decides that humans are too thinky. He says that our base instincts of just fucking and eating are all we ever should have done as animals. So he makes a parasite that basically makes you do nothing but fuck and spread the parasite and just survive. So these people, when they get infected by either rape, most cases, sex, or kissing, they all become like, they have a big wild orgy and they're like zombies. If they see you and you're not infected, you're going to get something in you one way or the other.
Oh God.
You know, and it's going to happen.
You know, what's wild about that statement is the dude that's engineering that thing has all this giant education and everything and all these smarts to get where he's at. And he's like, yeah, I just want to collapse all this, even though I've got to this point.
That's exactly what it is, and the movie plays out like a zombie movie, because more and more people get infected, and if you run into them, you've got to get the fuck away from them, because they're going to get in you. I mean, they're going to make sure that it happens.
When you said that the people were getting too thinky, it made me think of Kevin from The Office when he was like, "Why waste time? Say a lot word when few word do trick."
Yeah, that's basically what it amounts to.
It also made me think that if my husband could find the cure for my diabetes and make me extra, like, ravenous in other ways, I'm pretty sure he would do that. Like, he wouldn't even think about it.
I'm just throwing it out
there,
though.
I need you to
go
to work. What are you talking about?
I'm pretty sure if I did that all day, you would not want me to be at work. You'd be like, yeah, you're fine here.
I'm throwing it out there in this movie, though, and they don't focus on it too much, thankfully, because your mind fills in the gaps and you don't want to go there. There are scenes where two little kids are led around on leashes, and you know what's happening with those kids, and you're like, oh my God, that they went there. Like,
how did I
you know.
Miss that?
So in 1975, they got away with that.
There's stupid ass parents that don't know how to fucking control their kids that put their kids on fucking leashes these days. What are you?
Exactly. Yeah. Don't trust those parents.
Yeah, I don't. But
and then they make one scene blatant in the movie. One of the guys tries to get away from the zombies, gets in this one room, thinks he's okay, turns around. There's this older like guy in there, and there's a younger like girl, and he's like, "Have you seen my sweet daughter Sylvia? Isn't she sexy?" And he starts making out with a girl,
ugh,
the dad of the girl, and then the guy gets the fuck out of there. So it's just like, okay, that's what they'll do anything in this movie. Just saying.
Are we talking about the same movie we're talking about, the one we're reviewing right now, or are we talking about, what do you call it still, Shivers?
I'm talking about Shivers.
Oh, okay. I was about to say, how did I miss this? Okay, never mind.
I'm saying, you know, the stuff they got by with in the 70s is insane.
Yeah.
Just throwing it out there.
Ain't no way today.
Anybody that'll, and as far as music for this movie, getting back to it, it's 80s. It's very 80s music.
But it's also very appropriate. Like, the music was good for what we were watching.
Yeah, and I mean, they, you know, had the thrilling moments and all that stuff. Yeah. It does take away from.
I think the music they did really good because.
Lighting and all that was pretty good too. But anyways, yeah. Go ahead.
No, I mean, in the 50s, you had your 50s music to give it that feel, you know, and then in the 80s, excuse me, you had all the synthesizers that you could need to make it sound, you know, good. You had the party music. But then at the end, as the credits are rolling, you're back in the 50s again, which was kind of cool.
Yeah, and this isn't a trivia, but, like, actually that model for that spaceship that they use, they liked that so much they reused it in, like, Deep Space Nine later on or
That's
something.
That's kind of cool. It was a cool-looking spaceship. Like, I think they did a good job with the design of that.
Anything you want to say about this movie otherwise before we get into trivia about it? Because there is a lot.
Babe, do you have anything to say?
It was hilarious with the intro.
Well, we're not reviewing it, but.
I know, whatever. Okay. The intro, when we were watching, she was like, oh my God, what is this? And I was like, can you just watch the movie before you.
Oh, I already told him. Out. I told him exactly what I said. I said, I fucking hate this. And you were like, just give it some time.
It's a good movie. It's fucking, it holds up. You know what? You know what this movie made me think of? And I don't know if you ever saw it. Do you remember the movie Slugs?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, it. I always thought Slugs was a hell of a good movie. I know some people shit on it, but I thought the idea of Slugs was pretty awesome. Like, I still remember distinctly this one scene where the lady's chopping up a salad to feed it to her family, and everybody ends up with the slugs in their brain.
Yeah, this movie is like, I don't know. They didn't directly say that it was ever inspired by either Slugs or Shivers, but both movies have that general concept. Because that you see the slugs like creatures and Shivers as well, and they kind of look like the things in this movie a little bit more mutated, but they're about the same thing. It's a weird subgenre, but I think people have an innate just disgust of slugs enough to where it fits.
I do too. I think it plays on really good. I think that's one of the reasons Slither kind of did it even do good in the theaters.
Well, we're going to review that next. Okay. Oh. I was going to say, we'll keep that for the next episode.
All of the names, as I've said, of the main characters based on famous horror and sci-fi directors, and we kind of went through all of them. Only one I didn't mention was there is the janitor that you mentioned with the horrible, like, scream like banshees.
Yes.
And he just kept saying that. He was Mr. Miner, as in Steve Miner, okay. You know, which is another one, so... when leaving the house mother's cottage, one of the police officers mentions getting in contact with officers Dante and De Palma, which could, you know, obviously be references to Joe Dante, who made Gremlins and The Howling, and Brian De Palma, who made Carrie.
Yeah, so, it absolutely has to be that.
And then Roger Corman University, you know, that's reference to the famous B-movie director. The graffiti on the wall in the men's room where JC is trying to escape a number of slugs reads, "Go Monster Squad." So there's that reference. And also, there's a prominent stripper rules, STRYPER.
Striper.
Yeah, it's visible in that because the makeup artist Kyle Sweet's relationship with future husband, Striper frontman Michael Sweet, was, you know, they wanted to link it in the movie. So which that's why it says that.
Pretty funny because Striper, you used to listen to, what do you call it? Dan Cummins' podcast. Time Suck.
Yeah.
And one of the, he was talking about how one of the killers used to listen to heavy metal, but the heavy metal they were listening to was Striper, which is Christian rock or Christian metal.
That's Christian metal, man. That's a bad genre.
It's not actually, because my daughter, like, one of the songs is legit. It's called "To Hell with the Devil." Dude, it's actually a legit song. It's pretty funny.
I'm not saying the music's bad. I'm just saying, like, I get so much cringe from, like, that type of music.
It is pretty funny. Well, there's also Christian rappers, so.
Yeah, that's worse, so you're right.
Even our daughter, I did not know this, but our daughter listens to Christian metal sometimes. She's like, it's actually pretty good. And this is the same daughter who I'm getting accused for teaching her the dark ways, you know? The dark arts.
Well, she has to find out the things that she likes.
And I'm glad she is, but she's being open-minded about it, too. She's just not like, ew, this is Christian, you know?
A fair share of the film was shot in an old Woolworth department store that was converted that was converted into a makeshift studio.
Oh my God, do you remember Woolworths? My grandma used to take me.
I'm curious if there's any around.
No, still. I don't think Woolworths exist unless it was bought into something. But I just remember my grandma always wanting to go to Woolworths. And I just was like, why? I remember as a kid thinking, why was this?
Was it Nordstrom Rack back in the day?
So in Australia, it's still, you know, a thing.
Australians don't count. What are we talking about?
I know, but it is. So
closed its remaining variety stores in 1997.
Yeah, that makes sense. Woolworth, fuck, man. They were just like a huge version of Sears mixed with Macy's mixed
that's,
with.
That's what I'm saying, kind of like a Nordstrom's.
Yeah. Goddamn. Anyways.
When Fred Decker was asked during an interview why JC is handicapped, he replied, there's no reason aside except that we just don't see it. You can make a movie with a character who's handicapped without the story being about the fact that he's handicapped. I feel like that comment, if made today, would be a slap in the face of the DEI shit, because it's just like, do we have to call out the fact that he's handicapped or that we put him in the movie? You know, it's like, he's a guy that's handicapped. Like,
How it should be. Like, if you have a character in a movie, it shouldn't be, I'm handicapped, this is my entire personality and identity, so you need to accept it. And, like, no one's going to everybody's going to be like, fuck off, dude.
Or is just the dude just a hella cool person and you just don't give a fuck that he has arm crutches?
Yeah.
And he is. He's one of the coolest people in the movie. And then the most heartbreaking moment in the movie is when he says, with the brain slug still in him on the recording, that he walked for the first time.
Yeah.
And you're like, fuck, man, that's rough, you know?
Yeah, which fucking, yeah, understandably. But yeah, I agree with what they said. Can we just have a dude in the movie without, and, you know, fuck what directors and producers are thinking nowadays, because they're obviously... Majority of the movies that are coming out now that are just getting crushed by not necessarily the media, because the media is a little, sometimes they try to be one-sided, but like the fucking people paying to watch the movie that are like, no, fuck you. You did a horrible job.
But then they hide behind it. They're like, oh, so because we had this woman of color who was the lady, you think our movie sucks. It's like, no, your writing was shit. Your plotting, you know, was non-existent. The dialogue, I mean, who speaks like that? It's like, you're a bigot. They only hire these people so they can hide behind them.
I feel like I feel like more people would come to the defense of these actresses that are getting fucking just slammed by their horrible things. But then they double down on it instead of saying, like, look at Madame Web. Look at how she was like, this movie's fucking shit. I don't recommend you watch it. And everyone's like, they like her. No one's talking shit about her.
Dakota Johnson and Sydney Sweeney both was like, yeah, the movie was kind of shit. And everybody was like, oh, man, these girls are awesome.
Yeah, protect these girls at all costs, because they were paid to do something in a film and it did not go right. If any of these other actresses kind of just said, yeah, man, I just really wanted to be an awesome superhero. Yeah, it kind of looks like I'm a fucking Mary Sue and whatever, but I just really wanted to do this and I wanted to make something, but it didn't turn out that way. I feel like more people would come to the defense and be like, you know what? Dust yourself off and try again.
Yeah, well, they would, as opposed to being like, well, because a bunch of white men don't like my movie. Yes. You're like, oh, shit. Get the fuck out. We don't want to see you ever again.
Yeah. Even women won't stand by them. They're like, no, that's not what it is.
Well, and that's a whole other thing. You know, most of these movies that have any audience they had has been mostly male. The women are not showing up to them because you're not giving women anything in these movies. Even if you got a woman protagonist, you're not giving them anything that a woman actually wants to go watch in the first place. Mm-hmm.
Wolverine, Deadpool versus Wolverine. Oh, yeah. I like to see glazed plot, Hawaiian rolls.
The plot being the final scene where Wolverine's six-pack is out. I know what you're watching it for.
They look like Hawaiian rolls. I was hungry, okay?
Even Deadpool couldn't turn away from it.
There was also Dogpool. Don't act like that wasn't a thing for me.
Yeah, the Dogpool got a lot of the ladies, you know, in the quiz. Adorbs. So.
We would all adopt Dogpool.
I just hate this is a tangent, but I hate the shit that they're trying to manufacture, controversy they're trying to manufacture from Deadpool and Wolverine, just because it did so well and it's got two straight males, you know, white males as the lead. And they're like,
Ryan Reynolds straight? Like, we got some questions.
But I'm just saying, like, they're not, they're not the perceived acceptable kinds that they want out there.
Oh, got it. Yeah. No, they're trying to say, and I'm sure, babe, you've probably seen this in the fucking news or whatnot, but every woman fucking Marvel heroine that ever existed was supposed to allegedly be in Deadpool, but because, you know, nobody...
Ryan Reynolds cut him out of the movie last minute.
Oh, really? What about Elektra? Is that not a thing? Like, what about the other
You know
fucking...
what they say to that? They say, tough break, motherfucker.
And Elektra wasn't even a good movie, but he had her in it.
Yeah, and they even had a good line at Ben Affleck's expense, which I thought was amazing.
That was funny. Anyways.
And we probably ruined it for somebody who was like, I didn't know she was in that. It's been long enough.
Yeah, there's so many spoilers out there. Like, if you're getting spoiled from us and we're such a small podcast, I can't help you.
The tool shed sequence was filmed after principal shooting on the movie had wrapped. After a rough cut was shown to a test audience, several people thought that the picture needed more action, so that particular scene was added to the movie. Decker took the reshoot opportunity to add the scene of a zombie feet going up the fire escape and some minor beats in the living room and Cameron grabbing the slug midair as it was trying to go inside his mouth. So they were nice little additions if he had to go back to reshoot.
The slug midair, yes. Minor beats in the living room. What did they mean by that?
Just like more like little action scenes, okay. You know, so.
Yeah, as for the shed thing... It was okay.
I don't know. It gives you that kind of claustrophobic zombies on all sides moment that you kind of anticipate in these movies.
Yeah, that's true, and it was flimsy as fuck, so there's that.
Like I said, has the same dead guys do not get up and walk line as the Monster Squad. In an interview on the Blu-ray, Tom Atkins enthusiastically stated that of all the films he's starred in, this is his personal favorite. Sad to all those fans of Halloween 3 that think that might be his favorite,
yeah,
but it's
off,
this
man.
One.
Yeah, but does he say that about every movie he's in?
I don't know if he says that. There was somebody that we covered on one of these that kept saying that for, like, it seemed like every movie that they were in, but I don't remember who it was now. It was
actors. They're all like Jensen.
He did also say on the Just Desserts documentary for Creepshow that this Fred Decker's one of the few directors that he worked with that he'd love to work with again, which is a slap in the face for all the other directors he worked with.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's what it is, I guess.
Tough, dude.
Night of the Creeps wasn't the only Fred Decker script which included zombies attacking humans. Around 88, he and his friend, the screenwriter Shane Black, worked together on writing who was Lethal Weapon, obviously, was working on a final draft of a script called Shadow Company. It would have it was actually the first script that he wrote, that Black wrote before his draft for Lethal Weapon. And that script was going to be an action horror film about U.S. Special Forces fighting basically in the Vietnam War, and they had to fight zombies, which...
That's kind of cool.
That would have been kind of cool, actually. Yeah. The zombie soldiers would have raided the armory from a nearby army base and then proceeded to destroy the town in which they were buried, killing everyone in it and wiping it off the ground during Christmas night. The movie was going to be directed by John Carpenter sometime in 89, produced by Walter Hill, and then have Kurt Russell as the main role.
Hell yeah.
But it was never made.
Boo. We could have had a zombie Christmas fucking war film. Fuck.
A Christmas war film with zombies, John Carpenter directing, and Kurt Russell in the main role.
Yeah.
This alternate universe sounds amazing that had this movie actually work. I mean, we didn't get it, though. So, let's see. The college football team, the Bulldogs, was named as a tribute to writer-director Fred Decker's high school football team. So, I guess that's neat for them. At the beginning of the movie, at the sorority house, Pam's roommate is talking on the phone with a friend and asks if she's seen Plan 9 from Outer Space. And then later in 86, the house mother is watching that movie. So,
okay.
I wonder if the house mother is supposed to be Pam's roommate. They never specify that, but that would be interesting because she would have been a former sorority sister who came back to kind of take care of the place.
And she sure is judgy as fuck, which tells me she was probably a big ass whore back in the day, because she's like, I know what you girls are doing. Yeah, because you probably had a bunch of dicks in your mouth too, Grandma.
Wow.
The biggest whores are the biggest harpies when it comes to that stuff later in life. That's
clutching
how it always goes.
Girls that probably were in her butthole at some point.
Well, the axe went in her head first, but then maybe a slug went in her asshole afterward.
Yeah, maybe.
Fred Decker included every B-movie cliche he could think of and insisted on directing the script himself.
Seems like it.
Greg Nicotero and Howard Berger of KNB, two of the three members, play zombie extras. Fred Decker originally wanted to shoot the film in black and white. No. At least he got the 50s section in that color, scheme. The characters of Chris and JC were also featured in an early short film that Fred Decker made. Fred Decker's roommate Shane Black worked on the script. Black also cameos briefly in the shot at the police station with a cop on the phone with Detective Ray Cameron. The next year, Atkins starred in Lethal Weapon, Black's first produced screenplay. So that's the connection between these two films.
Cool.
Gordon the Cat was named after film producer Gordon Carroll.
Aw, Gordy.
Here's something that I couldn't figure out during the movie. Does the one sorority sister, because it's listed in here that she's the only female in the movie that becomes a zombie. It's all guys otherwise. Did she get turned by the cat, or did she get turned in that scene while they were fighting and while his back was turned to her?
I think it was the scene while they were fighting, because she was perfectly fine sitting on the couch doing her homework again when the zombies busted through, which she likes to walk towards that door at a glacial fucking pace. I don't know how she didn't get infected. They never showed the cat shooting its shot into her mouth. And you never hear about what happens afterwards. She's just unfazed by it.
Yeah, they never bring up the cat thing again until like a little bit later when Cynthia finds the cat.
Yeah, I mean, and because usually, I don't know if we have a time frame of how long it takes for these slugs to hit your body, you know?
Well, it's assumed that as soon as they enter your mouth and completely, they squirm up in your brain and they kill you instantly, because that's what happens to Johnny in the 50s.
Yeah.
But the reanimation doesn't seem to be that quick in the movie, but hers is almost instant. That's the thing that throws me in that
thing. So it could be the cat, but it's hard to say.
Fred Decker said in DVD commentary that the scene where Cynthia changes her top was staged intentionally to leave viewers wondering if they were going to actually get to see the boobs. And that is her first nude scene, as mentioned previously. The scene where Chris listens to JC's tape presented a challenge because Jason Lively couldn't basically stop laughing at everything that he did.
Oh, fuck.
So Fred Decker put photos of atrocities around the actor told him to look at them at various points in the scene. He said you can actually see him look at the picture of Auschwitz at an hour and 4 minutes and 20 seconds. Decker said it was really important to him that he take the scene seriously so that it, paid off. And I'm glad he did, because that scene requires him to react, appropriately. But it's like, okay, look at your grandma's autopsy over here on the one scene. Yeah. See if he laughed at that. Decker didn't want to do stop motion or guys in suits for the opening glimpse of the aliens, but he wanted them to appear different from Norm, so he ended up putting little people in suits.
Okay.
It didn't occur to me that it would get a laugh from the get-go. It was unintentional, but he said that it gave the audience the approval to laugh going forward.
I didn't even laugh. I was irritated.
A lot of people kind of have a nervous chuckle. It's like, man, these are some shitty-looking aliens, you know?
I'm lying. I did laugh because they did have butt cheeks, so I laughed at that.
Yes, you did.
Oh, my God, they had, look at the little butt cheeks.
Well, they did. Did you see the butt? It was, like, obvious.
Lively actually originally auditioned for the role of JC. If they were to reverse the roles, do you think that the guy who played JC would have been better in as the main guy?
I think that they could have reversed roles. I think that they both played their parts good enough. That shows that they're good actors. So I could totally see, because what's his name was kind of, he got his groove, not JC, but what's his name?
Chris, I think Romero. Yeah.
He got his groove, so he could have figured it out. I think as an actor, he could have pulled off JC's role, and the actor that did JC could have pulled off Chris.
Yeah,
it would have been weirder because the guy who played Chris was a lot taller.
Yeah, it would have been a pain for him to have to, bend over more to kind of sell that. The spaceship, as I said, was later used on Deep Space Nine, which is pretty cool.
So funny.
The film had pacing issues that Fred Decker said the studio heavily railroaded me on. It reached a point where an executive and the editor did an edit without Decker's involvement. He let most of their cuts go without a fight, but he learned his lesson. He said all of the films after this, I had a stopwatch in my pocket at all times to make sure that they didn't, you know, go over so that they would just be cutting the shit out of my movie, basically. Yeah. That's what he did. Producer, director James Wan announced in January 2023 that he wants to remake this movie. And if it's James Wan doing it, it might be good.
Possibly.
The only thing is, it's 2023, so maybe. There was a period there where James Wan looked like he was going to just fuck off from horror movies. So, I don't know. I mean, maybe he's decided to come back to him. Did
he
blatantly
say that? I could have sworn he flat out said, I'm done with horror.
I could have swore he said it whenever he first got, like, the Fast and the Furious, like, type stuff. But
yeah.
He might be changing his mind on that. I don't know. It sucks because, like, he's good at that, so, like, but I get it, too. He's probably like, well, I've put my stamp on that. I want to branch out and do something more. It's like, but what are you going to do? Because the current market is superhero movies or independent movies about, you know, diabetic lesbians in Europe that, you know, fall in love or something. That's your two options right diabetic now. You don't get lesbians. Any other options.
Why they got to be diabetic? I feel so fucking called out right now.
You know what? You know. Ever tell you that joke?
No.
Want to hear a joke, Sean?
Oh, God.
Yeah, so go ahead. Good joke.
All right, so there's this guy. He's an older dude. He had some bullshit dog. He lives in the city, and the dog died. He's like, fuck, I need to get an animal. I don't want anything that's going to require maintenance. I need some low-maintenance type of item, something that can talk. I want something that can kind of communicate with, you know? He's like, fuck it. I'm going to go by the pet store and see what they got. So he goes by the pet store, was walking around, looking at different options. Fuck, he's like, man, I don't want a animal that's going to go around the house tearing shit up and too old to do that. And he sees some of these birds, and he starts talking to the guy behind the counter about the birds, and the guy's like, well, what are you looking for? He's like, I don't know. I'm looking for something that can talk. He's like, I really don't have any friends. I'm old. Everybody I know is dying. He's like, well, we've got this bird over here. It's like a mimer bird. It'll talk and everything, but, you know, don't let it get sassy with you. He's like, what does that mean? He's like, kind of has a mouth on him, his previous owner. He's like, how bad? He's like, it's not too bad. He's got to be careful. It's like, okay, fine, that's good. So he buys the bird and goes home. Well, he's working a part-time job, so he gets up in the morning. So he has, like, the day with the bird, and he's talking. The bird's talking back, saying a random shit. And you know, it's interesting. It's fun. He's like, oh, this is different. So then he gets up to go to work in the morning, says bye to the bird. The bird says bye to him. He's like, fuck, that's awesome. So he goes to work. Comes home, walks in the door, tells the bird, what's up, bird? And the first thing the bird says is, go fuck yourself. And this guy's like, what? So he reaches in the cage and fucking try to chase it around and grab a hold of it and squeeze it. He hits it a couple times. It's like, motherfucker, I will kill you if you say that again. The rest of the night, the bird don't got nothing to say. The guy goes to bed, gets up in the morning, tells the bird bye. The bird says bye. He goes to work, comes home again. He's like, what's up, bird? The bird is, go fuck yourself. So the guy reaches in the cage, grabs the fucker by the neck, puts him in water, fucking throws him around the house, beats the shit out of him, throws him back in the cage. And the guy, he tells the bird, you got anything to say? And the bird, nothing. He ain't saying shit. Night goes by, goes to bed, wakes up the next morning to go to work, tells the bird, bye, bird. The bird says bye. Fucking goes to work, comes home. And when he comes home, he tells the bird, what's up, bird? Bird don't say anything. He's like, oh, you got nothing funny to say? And the bird looks at him and just goes, you know. That's a hella good joke. You know.
It's a dad joke.
No, it isn't.
It is a dad joke.
He don't got to tell him to go fuck himself because you know. I thought that was a hell of a good joke. Yeah, he ain't got to say anymore. That guy knows. Go fuck yourself. It's unspoken now.
So I see the script was written in a week.
Oh, yeah. What do you think about that?
You know. You're going to remember that joke. I'm telling you right now. I'm going to drop it on you later. You're going to say something. I'm going to look at you and be like, you know.
You're going to end up with a hole in your stomach.
I thought it wasn't funny.
Does this movie look like it or seem like it was written in a week?
Yes. What about you, babe? Do you think? Would you have guessed?
You know. They wrote Night of the Creeps in a week?
That's what it says, yeah.
That's fucking wild. They were able to pitch this. That dude must have been on a fucking coke bender and just like.
Him and Shane Black must have been just like, you know, doing lines like constantly or something. I mean, for to crank this out, I mean. Phil's Diner has become something of a signature for Fred Dekker and has been included somehow in all of his movies since then.
Kind
of
cool.
The title credits were designed by Ernie Farino, who also did films as diverse as The Alien Factor and The Terminator. Director Fred Dekker said, I'll ask him to do a kind of Famous Monsters of Filmland logo, you know, where the Night of the Creeps kind of just like falls into place, you know, as the stuff's coming in. Leslie Ryan is the girl brushing her hair in the opening black and white sequence. Writer-director Fred Dekker said he asked her out on a date, but she turned him down.
She's not a floozy.
Damn.
That's a hell of a thing to get turned down on right whenever you're the director of the film. A female second assistant director can be glimpsed in the about 38-minute mark, maybe waving away onlookers so that they wouldn't be seen on camera during the small crowd scene.
Oh, that's hella funny.
This has a plot similar as the Brain Leeches made by Fred Olin Ray in 1978, where people are controlled by alien parasites in their brains.
Yeah, these are parasites.
Jill Whitlow in this film is considered by some to be one of the first female empowered action heroines. Like I said, you know, Sarah Connor and Ellen Ripley. JC is the only person who speaks after being infected by the slugs. Everyone else is zombified as soon as they're infected.
That is true.
As their brains are used for incubation.
Yeah, look at that girl when they finally broke into the frat house. She dropped in the corridor for like a couple minutes and she was gone.
Yeah, and she didn't say anything. That's the reason I was wondering. I was like, since, you know, none of them, the rest of them talked, it was kind of weird if she'd been infected with a cat and still been able to function as long as she did. But it had been, like, super quick for her, like one of those zombies got to her or something. Karen, played by June Harris, is the only female student who turns into a zombie, as we said, and is killed.
Yep.
Closing thoughts on the movie. What are your ratings?
You want to go first, babe?
I'd give it a 3.8 out of 5.
Anything to follow up with that, or that's just it?
It's a cult classic, hands down. Should be in your wheelbox of different, like, October movies to watch, or something you can dust off once in a while and enjoy a movie.
Okay. Any of you want to guess?
Guess
how
what?
How I feel about the movie?
You liked it.
What do you think, Reverend?
I'm going to say you gave it a 3.
It is a 2.5 out of me.
You are poor.
I did not like this movie. I did not like it. I did not enjoy it. I was irritated more than anything. I get it's a B film, but you guys got to remember, I don't fucking like B films.
I don't really like them either, but I think this is a good version of those.
It's a better version for sure. I will give it at least that. That's why this is not like a 1 or a 2. It's slightly better. I'm meeting it literally in the middle, 2.5 out of 5, and I know that's technically not a passing grade, but there's worse ways to fail, in my opinion. I did not. It was just too much. There's classic 80s films that you guys would be so disappointed in knowing that I didn't like them or I didn't enjoy them. You'd be like, but what? That's an amazing classic, and I'm glad you guys feel that way, but I don't.
Damn, I can't believe you gave it that shitty of a score.
I don't like it. I should not have to, like, agree with you guys because you guys feel a certain way about the film.
I don't mind. It's perfectly fine. I was surprised that you gave such a high rating the last set that we did.
The 1977 one?
Well, that one and the 2019 Rabid.
Yeah, so. I rated higher on both of them. The Reverend actually rated slightly lower. They were still good scores, in my opinion. And also, this is not a zombie film to me. I don't feel like this. I feel like this is an alien parasite film. I feel like it's a completely different genre. Like, yeah, they're technically zombified. They're walking around, but that's what parasites do to you.
Yeah, Yeah, but they're still dead and they're walking around, and you kill them by shooting. Well, yeah, I think in this one you have to like blow their skull open and then burn the slug.
They don't really even eat human flesh, and that kind of goes back to rabbit. Actually, no, because wait, did they?
Rabbit, yeah, they bit. Rabbit, they bit people.
Yes, and in this we're not getting them biting people. So I was like, okay, I understand. You know, how this could technically, the people are zombified. I am going to say that, but I don't feel like this is a zombie film.
What?
I don't.
It's it came alien- back from a fucking car crash. All right, whatever.
An alien parasite was using their body as a host. That happens in nature. Like, that's physically a thing.
That doesn't happen in nature.
Yes, it does. There's fucking...
The dog doesn't spit shit out and it makes people move around.
No, I'm not talking about that specifically. I'm talking about, like, parasites that will take fucking insects and fucking use their... Totally take over their brain and fucking have them...
I'm gonna kick back on you then. You not think that there's zombies in The Last of Us, because that is a fungal infection of the brain that causes you to do all that stuff.
Where did the fungus come from? Because I remember Earth. I only watched two.
This Earth, regular.
It was from Earth?
Yeah.
Yes.
It's a natural fungus. It just it was able to evolve
Cordyceps.
Yeah.
It's just mutated.
Do they bite?
No, it's a spore. What?
Okay.
Do the zombies bite? I mean, they'll bite you in The Last of Us.
I feel like if they're biting you, because
they can spread it to you that way.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't watched all of The Last of Us, so I don't fully understand the concept of it. I don't feel like me answering is a full clue. Right off the bat, what you guys are telling me, I don't think they are. I actually thought it was from space that how they were getting infected again.
Nope, it's regular cordyceps just mutated, because in the lore of the TV show, at least, I don't think it's established in the game. Global warming has allowed cordyceps to basically survive at higher and higher temperatures than it normally would have, and therefore it's able to get in the grain. And when people eat the grain and eat the bread, they get infected.
Ergot.
It's in the grain and the bread, and you mix it together.
Yeah.
And
the pudding pops.
Right off the, yeah, just the first thought that comes in my head is that, no, they're not zombies.
Oh, there's a lot of people who don't agree with that.
That's fine. I'm
going to say what the audience is feeling. You're a whore. That's some bullshit.
And you turned me into a wife, so there's that.
Oh, my God, dude. She hasn't even watched The Last of Us. I tried to
get her. That's why I just said I disqualified my own answer by saying I don't think me answering is a good thing because I haven't watched the full thing. So just based off of the information you guys have given me, that is my uneducated guess.
I've been trying to get her to watch it. She won't go for it.
It was scary.
That's the whole idea.
I have to watch enough scary movies. Speaking of scary, and that's another thing about this score, is that, yes, it's a B movie. I don't feel like it was going to be like a horror comedy. I don't know if it was intended to be. I really wasn't laughing too much. A horror comedy, even, I like getting scares out of those, and we have gotten scares, and this movie was not scary. I don't really even feel like Rabid, the 1977, was too scary, but that one still had the biting, you know, like the zombie biting thing. That's why I was like, okay, this one, I'll allow this one, but even by a thread, that one's allowed in, as well as the 2019. I don't, you know, it's zombie-ish, and that's why I'm like, okay, I'll allow it. Put my sombrero hat on. I'll allow it.
What?
He knows what meme I'm talking about, and he knows what TV show I'm talking about.
I'm going to put a 3.9 on this movie because I don't quite think it's... I mean, there's people out there screaming, it's a 5. It could be to some other people. I think a 3.9 of 4 is appropriate for what it is and what it's trying to be. It's just a fun B movie.
Yeah, I think people are going to be way more disappointed by my score. I'm like, why is she even on the podcast? Well, you know.
This is why.
Because I produce it.
I mean, we can't break it down like we do with Rabbit. It doesn't have the intellectual stuff going on. It. I will say this. After seeing Rabbit 2019 and then going to watch this, I could just turn off my brain and enjoy it like a zombie, basically. But, like, I really enjoyed thinking through Rabid 2019. That,
yes.
I like when movies do that.
Yeah. I mean, Rabid, I wouldn't compare this movie to Rabid. It's not fair. Rabid, it had, you know, it's newer, had a better budget. They just, I don't know, those girls did a pretty damn good job with it. And it's just in no comparison with what they had available to them in 1986. That's not true, because in 1977, that Rabid was actually pretty good, too. And they also didn't have what Rabid of 2019 had. So I guess that's a moot point right there.
I just think that they accomplished what they set out to do. It was just they wanted a sci-fi-esque, you know, just romp, and that's what they did with the movie.
They probably went above and beyond of what they wanted to do, and that's great. It did not appeal to me as a watcher.
Because what I consider a good B-movie is characters you can root for, monsters that are, you know, like that they have to overcome, and then, like, you know, it's got dialogue that you can quote later, and this movie has every bit of that. Whether you like the dialogue, yes, different story, but it definitely sticks with you after you've heard Thrill Me for the 42nd time.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, that guy sold the movie.
He did. He really does. Tom Atkins is the man in this movie.
It's funny the stuff that you guys like when I don't like a movie, when I'm on the opposite end of the spectrum here, is you guys like the same thing, and it's usually like, well, this actor, and I was like, I fucking hated him, you know?
He's a badass actor. He's classic for horror movies.
And, wow! And he just sells that grizzled detective that's just like ready to just like one more good case, and he's ready to put the bullet in his mouth or the gas and go out that way, whatever. So
the two things on this podcast, I will never come on here and pretend that I think something was great when it wasn't to me, but I will also not tell you that you shouldn't think that it's great. Like, I almost feel a little bit apologetic that I don't like it as much. I'm not sorry. I'm not.
I apologize, because we've had listeners say they want us to fight over these movies.
And here it is. Now, I feel like this is such a classic movie, and it's got to be somewhat of a cult classic that people are really going to come at me, you know, like, I can't believe. And it's like, I'm sorry. That's just how I am. I'm glad you enjoyed it. I wish I enjoyed it a little more, I guess. But I didn't. So here we are.
I mean, you elaborated on why you didn't like it. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and argue with you to get you to like it, because you can't make people like movies. Mm-mm. That's the thing.
Yeah, and we're definitely not here to do that. And we might say something like, hey, give this a watch. Would I tell listeners to watch this? Yeah. Yeah, I would. Especially if they want to, like, communicate with me and be like, well, did you even like this, or did you even notice this? Sure, go ahead. I'm game.
The other thing is, too, that this movie has going for it that is actually the opposite of what you like, just based on what you said, is it's got a lot of 80s nostalgia built into it.
And it
does. A lot of people dig that now. They go back for it.
Yeah.
It's part of the reason. That's honestly part of the appeal of Night of the Comet. I love that, the 80s vibe of that movie, like, a lot.
Do you think, though, maybe a person like me is actually, because we're seeing it so much now, it's coming back so hardcore. I mean, Stranger Things, obviously, is the first thing that comes to mind, that I'm getting kind of tired of it. It's like, oh, I've seen this, you know?
Maybe, but maybe you're just one of those people that doesn't really have nostalgia. There's people out there that's like that. That's true. I mean, there's people right now that are nostalgic for the 90s. Now, I like the 90s, but it wasn't a decade that I'm like, oh, God, we really need to bring back those jeans that, you know, that had the big bottoms, you know, that just drug in the mud and got nasty all the time. And those things are coming back. So,
JNCO jeans.
Skater jeans. Yeah. And, yes, our daughter wears them.
Yeah, I mean, I hated those fucking things even whenever I was going through that time period. So I hate to see the
'90s, back. The one thing that I am nostalgic over is definitely the cartoons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were better in the '80s. I have to admit, there's people that's going to be beating down my door over saying that. What about He-Man? Dude, have you tried watching that as an adult? It's not that great. I mean,
just tell them to meet you in Appalachia in the middle of the night.
Yeah, DuckTales, a little bit different. It's a pretty good show, but I mean, it was still, you know, there was other stuff that came out in the '90s that I do appreciate more. So, cartoon wise,
yeah. Anyways,
but. Yeah, I even told you, if you remember, I said you're going to be sick of Thrill Me by the time that you're that you watched.
I think after the third time of him saying that, it's like, I'm over it, and that wasn't the last time he said it at all.
So I figured that the rest of the movie would be like, whenever you watched it. So anyways, that's our thoughts on the movie. If anybody out there thinks it's 5 out of 5, please comment. We'd love to hear it, you know. Or if you think it's the worst movie ever and you give it a 1, I don't see how it's that bad when there's Marvel movies out, but go ahead and comment and say it.
Yeah,
you know,
that's better fine. Yet, I want to hear too, does anyone out there agree with me that this is not a zombie movie? And if you think it is, tell me why. I want to know.
Well, I mean, that's a good point too. I mean, there's several movies this season that are technically that we have are infected humans, which if somebody wanted to say that's not a zombie movie, then sure. Because I've really debated the crazies, both the original and the remake, but
yeah,
that's really infected humans for sure in those movies.
Yeah, I think infected humans qualify as zombies. So,
anyways, with that, folks, peace be with you
and with your spirit.